songs of our lives. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I am an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Joy Guidry, Thor Harris, Sarah Hennies, Greg Davis, so many more. But this week, I am so excited to have Jay Moss of... Or AKA of, I don't know, the Modern Folk, that's AKA. But anyway, been a big fan of the Modern Folk for quite a while, and the real impetus to have him on was this Modern Folk Electronic Ensemble album that came out last month or in April on Debacle, which is an album I keep returning to. I really like the Modern Folk stuff generally, but something about this one really scratched an itch I didn't know I had, and I've returned to it a lot. It's just, yeah, and it's got some pretty interesting stories behind it that we get into at the you know, beginning of this episode. But I saw him, he was on the Debacle Records video newsletter, which if you haven't checked those out, the label's been doing those each week, and they're really cool. It's such a, I don't know, it's really novel and interesting idea of a newsletter rather than just typing up a bunch of stuff that people will inevitably probably delete from their inboxes if they, you know, maybe scan a little bit. But anyway, he was on there talking about this record and just, I don't know, there's something I found really engaging about him, and I thought, hey, we should talk about some songs. And so we did. So yeah, we recorded this really recently, last week in fact. Had way too much fun, and I hope you all enjoy it. My guest today is a musician, a songwriter, an improviser, an anti-capitalist, part of No Scenes and All Scenes. It is Jay Moss. Woo! So how's it going?
Good. I just appreciate you inviting me on here. It's really kind of a blessing to be able to come in and talk about songs I love. Probably could go on forever about a subject like that.
This is roughly the 90th episode I've recorded, and I haven't got tired of talking about songs. So, endless. So I guess, okay, latest release that you've had out is the Modern Folk Electric Ensemble on Debacle, which is a record I love very much. And I'm kind of curious if you can tell me, like, how did electronic ensemble. I keep doing that. Electronic ensemble, not electric ensemble. how did this, like the electronic ensemble, at least in this sort of iteration, like how does it come into being? Are there different versions of the ensemble? I know you've got like a lot of different, like the world of the modern folk is expansive, at least in my head. Maybe it's not actually, maybe it's all an illusion, but how did this iteration come into being?
Well, I don't think that's in your head. There are a lot of like different permutations, and I like to be able to create music by myself and mm-hmm. with a band, but mm-hmm. I like to keep it all under the same project. But I do like to, as you've seen, like I like to play with the names.
Yeah.
That's why I've done Modern Folk Electronic Ensemble, or sometimes I've done like a trio band.
Right.
When I'm doing the stuff with that kind of especially refers to like the full band, full live recording method. But so when I decided to name things like Modern Folk Electronic Ensemble, it kind of came around because I was having some issues with my hands, and like playing guitar was like a little uncomfortable, and I felt like I couldn't do it for as long or things like that. And so I was like, that was a little, you know, frightening to me because I really like to express myself that way. And I was like, well, what else can I do? So I started to like mess around with keyboards and tape loops, not like fancy tape loops, like you know, quarter inch tape or anything like that. Right. But like, I would take apart cassettes and cut it and tape it back together. So it's just like, a repeating loop, and some stuff like that is involved. And, you know, synthesizers and stuff like that. So I could still make music that I was finding interesting, but not use my hands in the same way that was causing me discomfort. Mm-hmm. And luckily some of those problems have gotten a little better. So I'm, you know, back to playing guitar too, but, the Modern Folk Electronic Ensemble, I think, kind of started as a way to explore non-guitar ways to do my thing. But that's kind of funny to say, because this particular album, the one on Debacle, like, has a lot of guitar on it. So, you know, it's like I will always disregard that. I will always come back to the guitar. I mean, even if it's physically difficult.
Yeah, you know, just find other ways to play it, I guess. I don't know. So on this record, I think in the description you talk about, like, I think it was like getting this music through a series of like really vivid dreams that you had back in 2022. Which I think I'm like really fascinated by that. That's really cool. Can you talk a little bit about like what those dreams felt like? Like, I don't know, like viscerally or even sonically.
Yeah, sure. You know, it's strange because I don't remember in my life having dreams like this that were as creatively inspiring or as memorable, like ever. And so I don't know what caused that. I mean, I could speculate, like, you know, my daughter was born in 2021. So by the time 2022 rolled around, maybe my soul or whatever was like sort of final, like fully adjusting to fatherhood or something like that. Or like, you know, I was changing in some way. But anyway, these dreams were like, you know, they were very visceral, and I was hearing sounds in them. And I feel like this is a cliche way to describe it, but they felt and looked like something that would be like in a David Lynch movie. A lot like, you know, the most abstract parts of Eraserhead.
Right.
Where like, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because Eraserhead is a movie about fatherhood or parenthood. You know, it was like forms and like tubes connecting things and like throbbing, pulsing, oscillating sounds. You know, weird spaces, like interior spaces and lighting. And yeah, so I did sort of, after having these dreams, I was very inspired. Like, I was like, this is perfect music to try to recreate with synthesizers and so on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know that I did a great job of describing it just now, but I think David Lynch, saying it's like a David Lynch thing, I think is a good shorthand for, I'm sure, for a lot of people that listen to this podcast.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's, like you mentioned that, like the sort of this recurring presence of elemental forces of, you know, you mentioned like light and spaces and so did those like feel like, I guess, symbolic to you or kind of more direct and sensory? Well, kind of
it was both. It was very sensory, like I was there and seeing and feeling these things, but it was also symbolic. Like, I think, like, it was trying to tell me something. And I think the thing it was trying to tell me was just like, you know, and I'm not like a scholar of this kind of thing, so I don't want to say it wrong, but like what I would say is kind of like a Zen thing or like a Buddhist thing, that everything is one. Like, we're all just a part of one thing. There's like no real separation between us or between me as an individual and like anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, to say it like very succinctly, just like all is one. I felt that like what these things were trying to tell me was my situation as part of the whole.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense to me. Do you find that like becoming a parent has changed the way you experience music?
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, in a lot of ways, I have less time to luxuriate in it.
Yeah.
Right. But at the same time, like, my experience of it could be thought of as richer because it's just like, oh, you know, I listen to records all the time still, you know, mm-hmm. When we're having breakfast together, or, you know, when we're just hanging out or driving in the car, and, right. you know, sometimes it might be like the baby songs or whatever. And, right. you know,
sure.
I'm sort of attending to that as music too, because I'm not the kind of person that can hear music and like not think about it. Right. So even like Baby Shark, I'm, you know, thinking about it.
Right.
So, yeah, I think, like I said, I don't have a lot of time to, you know, sit back and flip records all night, but
yeah.
I don't believe it's lessened it or really lessened my interest in music. And mm-hmm. in fact, just over the past couple of days, something great's happened, which is that like my daughter specifically called out some grown-up songs she really likes for the first time.
Oh, that's amazing. Yes.
And so it's only three songs, but I made her a little playlist, and we've been listening to the playlist on repeat, and she does little dances, and
oh man,
she like, and so that's been really fun and exciting.
What are the three songs?
So it's Turtles Have Short Legs by Can, which okay. I think makes a lot of sense, 'cause it almost sounds like a Baby Shark song.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then Sally McLennan by the Pogues. And then Daughter by Loudon Wainwright.
Awesome.
Which Daughter was a song that my wife and I listened to when she was, you know, in the womb, thinking just this is, it's a vaguely sweet song about being a dad, but it's also like kind of creepy if you listen to the lyrics. I mean, I don't know that Loudon Wainwright was like the best dude, and he couldn't help himself even in writing a song about his daughter, coming off as kind of a manipulative weirdo.
Yeah.
But it's still, the song still kind of makes me tear up.
Yeah. No, I feel that. I mean, I got a daughter, and I that's awesome though. I remember, so my kid, she's going to be 12 here in next month, but I remember like those first, yeah, like grown up songs that she liked. Like one of them I still was, oh my God. Oh, another one Bites the Dust by Queen.
And part of that
was because when she was a baby, we turned it into a kid, like we turned it into a kid, like a baby song of when we were trying to get her dressed. So it was like, pants, 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 let's put on your pants.
And so I think,
which someday I'm going to make like a kid's album. That's the only one I got. But anyway. And so I remember like when she got a little older, and it must have been like subconscious, like she recognized it, and then it was like, oh, this is like her favorite song, was Another One Bites the Dust. And and then they get this age, and then when you're in the car, they control the music, because and you get to listen to, and then you get to listen to stuff you never thought you'd listen to because they're into it, and it's pretty awesome. And so
I'm excited to just, you know, have her drop something on me that she just found. Like
That's been happening recently. Like there's this one song, it's insane. And it's like, what's it called? It's called like Gnarly. And it's this very like electro, but it's, I was like, this is nothing I would probably ever have picked to listen to, but she heard it and loves it. And I was like, it's weird and ridiculous. And it was awesome. It's like, that's the best. You know, when my wife was pregnant, it was like, this was one of the things I dreamed about, was like us telling each other about music.
And right, me too. So, to be honest with you,
I know, it's like, it's the most, again, it's the most cliche thing for someone like me to say, but whatever, that's my life. So well, hey, this is a good segue to get into the songs. We're talking songs, so let's shift into the questions. And as always, to begin, what is the first song that you remember?
So the first song I remember is Man in the Long Black Coat by Bob Dylan.
Oh, wow.
It's off of his 1989 album.
Oh, mercy.
And my dad must have bought that album the day it came out, right? Because, so I was born in 1984. And for me to remember that song and it be the first song I made a musical memory of, like, he must have gotten that album right away, which makes sense because he is a huge Bob Dylan fan.
Mm-hmm.
And that song really made an impression on me.
Yeah, I got a lot of love for Oh Mercy. I came to it later than, like, my dad was big Dylan, huge Dylan fan, still is. But I don't remember, I mean, 80, so this 89, I would have been 10. Like, I think I was big into my, like, Guns N' Roses phase at that point. But I remember hearing, it wasn't this song, but it was Ring Them Bells, was on some movie or something that I saw when I was, like, I don't know, early 20s or something. And I just remember thinking, what Dylan song? Like, what the hell? What is this? And going back and listening to the record and being like, oh, yeah. And anyway. But this is, I really like this song.
Ring Them Bells is like a massive song.
Yeah.
You know, that song's incredible.
Yeah. It's,
I think as a kid, like the mystery of Man in the Long Black Coat and like,
yeah,
it's got those, I think it's an organ, but they make it sound like crickets at the beginning. Like it's very atmospheric.
It is. Yeah. And like the percussion's like real distant and
yeah.
The scent, like there's like the, I don't know, it sounds like a swamp or something. Like it's weird.
Yeah, I think it's been much discussed, but that and the follow-up album have the most weirdest production of any Bob Dylan record ever. And you know, because Daniel Lanois, I mean, people have talked about that over and over again, but yeah, I mean, they're two great records.
Yeah, but it is like, there is like this song in particular. I think that's a good, like it is, there is this air of mystery in it. It like, it feels very like mysterious and kind of mournful. And I don't know, even like a little cursed or something like, and I can imagine as a 5-year-old, like that feels almost like weirdly fairy tale ish. You know?
Yeah. I was getting into the story. I was listening to the lyrics and I was like captivated by the story of this, you know, I guess there's sort of like a damsel, you know, it's like she left with the man in the long black coat. I don't know. Yeah. It just fascinated me.
Yeah. That's cool. What is a song that either makes you cry, but doesn't actually make you cry, it makes you feel in some kind of way that is in that zone?
So it was tough for me to answer this one. Cause like this happens to me very easily. A lot of songs will make me cry, but the one I chose, which is guaranteed to make me cry, was April 14th, Part 1 by Gillian Welch.
Yeah.
And I feel like this song has a great way of uniting, like, so very inconsequential sorrow with, like, very profound, large scale sorrow. So she starts the song, she's talking about like being bored, she gets high, she gets stoned, she goes to a show or something, or like goes to a bar and there was a show, it's something like that, and she like sort of sees this struggling touring band and it's like, that's okay, you know, not the worst problem to have, but she somehow imbues it with this like tragedy.
Yeah.
And then she's singing about Abraham Lincoln getting shot and the Titanic sinking. Right. And I love the way she sort of unites like those two versions of sorrow.
Yeah.
And then she just has so much pathos in her delivery. Like she's like, some spirit from High Lonesome Appalachia, like that got polished up for Nashville, and it's just so perfect. Like everything she does, it has this kind of hint of perfection to it.
Right. Yeah. There's something of, like the way that she sings and like her delivery. And so, I feel like she could sing literally anything and it would still feel devastating. Like she could sing Baby Shark and somehow make it.
I'd like to hear that.
That's wow, God, that's what the world needs is the Gillian Welch children's album, and just raise a whole bunch of super depressed kids. I mean, you know what, it's the world we live in. No, but I think that's a really good, like that, those Yeah, the way that she takes this like small personal thing and folds it into some of the most sort of tragic moments in history, or, you know, and yeah, they all carry the same gravity in her hands.
Yeah, I kind of choke up just thinking about that song, to be honest.
It was when I was prepping for this and listening, I don't know that I made it through the whole song. I think that, you know, I love Gillian Welch, but I can't just put her on anytime.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I cry very easily to songs.
Yeah.
And that's not the only Gillian Welch song that will do that to me. For sure.
Well, on the other side of that, what's a song that'll put you in a better mood?
So, I think for this one, I said Endless Fashion by Lil Uzi Vert. And yes. So, like, I kind of put, I love that song. And I love the album it's on, the Pink Tape. I put that in as a bit of a stand-in for that sort of genre of music.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that's great about that song in particular is it's got like just Nicki Minaj.
Right.
Every time Nicki Minaj features on a song, she totally steals the show.
Right.
In that song, she says she's got like a refrain, and it's, I mean, maybe darkly funny, but she's like, she says, "I got a Republican doctor, make my ass great again, MAGA." And like, you know, it's hard to laugh about anything even tangentially related to that shit, but like, admit that's clever.
That's super good. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I totally get what you mean too about like just this genre. I mean, I'm like, I think I had this conversation with Claire Rousey on the show about like, I think Young Thug is arguably the greatest artist of the last 20 years. This Endless Fashion to me, it's like just glitter chaos or something, and it makes me feel happy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge Uzi Vert fan, and like, I love the way he is just unapologetic about what you might call his interest. Like, you know, the lyric in that song, like, "Sold my soul for Carhartt mixed with chrome hearts." It's like, you know, it's a sort of, it's vaguely nihilistic, but it's like, I don't know. I just, there's something about it that does, you know, put me in a better mood. And all those songs move, and the production is like mind blowing.
Yeah. I mean, I often feel like a lot of the quote unquote most experimental music I hear is like production on, is like this kind of stuff. Like the production on these, like on this, or like Young Thug or any of that, it's often just completely bananas. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me, but it does. I don't understand. I'm like, how in the hell are you putting all of this stuff into a blender and this is coming out like so together and amazing? Like,
yeah, I don't think people will be like, oh, it's like, it's pop rap. They might write it off, but you know, you know, I think people might be inclined to, you know, pass it over. But like on the Pink Tape, for instance, there's a song where he incorporates, like, I think it's Chop Suey by System of a Down.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. It's so good.
And there's like so much, like, hip hop and rap has been doing this for so long. I remember talking to somebody, like, one of my favorite albums of all time is the Tupac Machiavelli album.
Right.
And like, one of the tracks has fucking throat singing on it. And this was in like early 90s. I mean, and yeah. So
yeah,
people are missing out.
I think people discount like the fact that it's a skill to have that breadth of taste and knowledge of where you might find samples to recontextualize.
Yeah, for sure. I think sampling is like, the people who are so good at it, it's such an art form that blows me away when to take something and put it in a completely different environment and it works and you can hear what it is, but it's my hat is off to those producers and those people. All right, well, everybody's favorite question: what is objectively the best song of all time?
Well, you know, obviously, I think you said like in the instructions that that's obviously like sort of tongue in cheek. And, but for that, I put Sway by the Rolling Stones.
Nice. And
I don't think they're the greatest band ever. You know, I do love a lot of their records. They definitely have some low lows.
They got some high highs.
But yeah, they have some very high highs. And to me, like, Sway is, you know, it's like the platonic ideal of a rock and roll song. The lyrics are, there's just like no fat on the bone. The band is just like, you know, it opens with that massive riff.
Yeah.
And then like, which interestingly, I'm pretty sure is played by Mick Jagger.
Really?
I think so.
Man.
I'm not even sure Keith is on that song, which is kind of interesting.
That is super interesting. Yeah, because the like that killer solo at the end, that's not, that's, anyway,
I can't. Mick Taylor,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. God. I was like, it's right there. Yeah.
But, you know, the desperation in the way that Mick Jagger is singing, like, you know, yeah, it's just, it's perfect. And that song, I mean, that would also put the fit that puts me in a good mood, but potentially also the makes me cry, which is why I chose it for the best song. You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
And I will caveat that, like, you know, it's rock and roll, right? So there's other types of songs.
Absolutely. But, yeah. As, yeah, no, I mean, as a rock and roll song, I mean, yeah, it's, I don't know. And I always love this, like, Mick's performance on this song is just, it's like he's trying to like shake something loose in the ether or something. I don't know. It's so, he's just, yeah, it's so intense.
Yeah. You know, that the, it's just that demon life that's got me in its sway. It's like, what's more relatable? Yeah. What's
right?
What is there anything else that's happening to us all every moment of every day? So it's just like, and in the way he sings it, like, speaks to that experience. He's like you said, he's shaking something loose. He's putting everything out there into that booth or whatever it was.
Yeah, man. When I saw this song on your list, I was like, God, I really hope this isn't like one of the songs you hate or something. Cause I was going to be, it's going to be really fucked up. Like, dang.
Farthest from it.
Okay, well, what is a song you used to love but you've heard it recently or you think about it now but it doesn't really do it for you?
Okay, so this I think was the Chance the Rapper No Problem. So I went through my wife and I together went through a phase where we were like listening to Chance the Rapper all the time.
Yeah.
And like listen to acid rap a whole bunch. And then it's funny because my wife like called in and she was like the whatever number caller and we won tickets to a show, went to see him. It was a great show. Like we were definitely the oldest people there by a lot that weren't chaperones.
Right.
And so that was kind of funny, but you know, and then, you know, that follow-up album, or I don't even know if he called it an album, like mixtape. Yeah, I think
he calls them all mixtapes, doesn't he? Like,
came out, and that single from it, No Problem, I just like, I loved it so much. And it's got two guest verses by Lil Wayne and 2 Chainz that are just show stealers.
Yeah.
They show up Chance on it hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what made me like kind of start to be less of a Chance fan is like, you know, he came out with such a head of steam, but what's really going on with this guy?
Right.
And then it's like, he kind of turned like weirdly Christian.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there was, yeah, it's like, it was always there in like the background. I feel like, I mean, cause you know, like there was a lot of like, this has like all this like gospel and stuff, but then I don't know. Yeah. It became, it feels like it became way more, upfront maybe is the, I know what you mean.
I started to look back on acid rap and think to myself, did this guy ever do acid? You know, it's just like,
right.
It all started to feel like a little phony to me. And I just, and not that I'm obsessed with authenticity, like,
sure,
but this was just a specific case to where something about the way his persona developed made me look back and not like his music as much.
Yeah. I haven't listened to Coloring Book in a while. Because when it came out, I loved it. I listened to it so much. And I remember when the video for Same Drugs came out, and I think my kid was, she must have been pretty young, 3, 4. Anyway, I don't know. We were watching it, and she just got super emotional and was just bawling over the video. And I'm sure if I told her that now and played it for her, she would just look at me like, what the hell was that? But so like that song has always had this like really special place for me, because it was just that visceral experience. But I totally get what you're saying. Like this is a good example of like, I don't think when like, obviously like 2 Chainz and Wayne are amazing, but like they don't always show people up, especially like now and then, you know, I mean, there was a period where Wayne was going to blow everybody off the fucking, you know,
yeah, whatever. He rests on his laurels now.
Yeah. But like, this was one, you know, like you're saying, like Nikki, if you're asking her to do a guest spot, you know, like you're just giving the song over to her.
And, yep.
And in some way it's like, I respect that because you know what you're doing, but here, yeah, I don't know. It's like, this feels less like a chant song. And it's like, yeah, just give me the 2 Chainz and the Wayne verse and I'm good.
Yeah. And I mean, the song does bang, you know, yeah. But something like the worm turned for me on Chance. And I mean, to be perfectly honest, there's another rapper from Chicago that I considered for this, but I kind of just didn't even want to talk about him. You know what I'm saying? It's like too much. It's too bad.
I know. It's made some of my favorite albums ever, but it's tough. Yeah. Anyway, let's not go down that road. A popular answer for this question is the Ignition remix, because it's R. Kelly.
Oh, yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's like the greatest pop song ever, but
that makes a lot of sense, because that is a great song.
Yeah.
And okay, I feel the same way, too.
It's you can't do it. I don't think you can do it. Like, I don't know. Although I have a friend who DJs weddings all the time. Like, that's his job. He's like, dude, people request it every fucking wedding still. So
when I saw this one, I wanted to attempt to answer with somebody who hadn't done something horrible.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. R. Kelly. It's like, that's easy. Kanye, that's easy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I appreciate that. It's because then I don't have to talk about R. Kelly or Kanye again, even though I'm sitting here talking about R. Kelly and Kanye. Okay. What's the song that people absolutely hate? I don't know who these people are. Maybe it's everybody. Maybe it's your daughter. But you love it. You don't care.
Oh, okay. For this one, I did Hotel California.
Man, yeah. Everybody hates Hotel California.
And
not everybody, but...
Well, it's rare to find somebody who will admit they like it, but...
Yeah.
So there's a couple reasons I love this song. I mean, first of all, I think I've always thought there's something... There's only... You can't really judge music objectively, but if you could, the metric would have to be sales.
Yeah.
And so with Hotel California, like, you can't take that away from it. Right. But, you know, that has nothing to do with taste of, sure, you know, any given person you might be talking to. But the reason I love this song is because it falls into this made-up subgenre of songs in my head, which is, like, classic rock songs that are fake reggae songs. And
yeah,
I'm a sucker for those. So, you know, and almost every example of that is British. So Hotel California is the only classic rock fake reggae song that I can think of off the top of my head, except for Mother and Child Reunion by Paul Simon, which is a little bit of a gray area because the band is a real reggae band on that song.
Right.
So it comes across as more real reggae. Like,
right,
some of the fake reggae songs are like, so divorced from reggae. It's like Simulacra, yeah. Like that Led Zeppelin song, Jamaica.
Yes.
That to me is like the pinnacle of this genre.
Yes.
Hotel California is a perfect example of that too. And that's one reason I like it. I mean, I love the lyrics. The lyrics are classic. They've got that mystery thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're mm-hmm. evocative. And I love the guitar solo from Joe Walsh. It is a little too long. I mean, it's a long song. I understand why people don't like it, but I'll ride for it.
Hey, you know, you and, I mean, millions of others, honestly. Let's be like, yeah, people like with most people I know would leave the room. Okay, well, what's the most romantic song if it's not Hotel California?
Okay, so for this one, I did Twin Peaks theme. Go back to David Lynch. Because I feel like Twin Peaks, you know, it's a very romantic show in a way. Like, it mm-hmm. plays with the idea of romanticizing things mm-hmm. with its whole, like, soap opera parody situation. And then, aside from what happens in the show and how it kind of constantly turns the dial up to 11 on its romanticizing of things, mm-hmm. like, just I'm sure you might agree with me, like, this song, the theme song, is just like so perfect somehow.
Oh yeah.
And you know, when I hear it, I am sort of taken off in flights of romantic fancy. It's one of my the soundtrack album is just like one of my favorite pieces of mm-hmm. music ever. And then when they put out the updated soundtrack album for The Return that had, like, you know, some new versions, and it had that big classical piece, The Threnody for the Victims mm-hmm. of Hiroshima,
mm-hmm.
that kind of even brought that up to another level. So
right, yeah, no, I totally, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's something about, like, I feel like this, it's like super, there's like a, it's very sentimental, but it's also kind of unsettling. And like the way the chords, like, they're very, like, slow and kind of aching in this, like, yearning sort of feeling, I think. Yeah, it's it makes a lot of sense to me as like a romantic.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, maybe it's just me, but, you know, you think of romance, it's, there is an unsettling thing mm-hmm. underneath it. Right. Because say you're in the throes of a romance, like the early stages, you know, you're not, like, comfortable, right? Because you don't,
right.
Cause it's, like, uncertain. And so, yeah. So that the way that Twin Peaks and the theme song speak to that
mm-hmm.
multifaceted nature of romance, you know, I like that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah. God, I mean, it's been a long time since I was in that, cause I've been
right?
married for over 20 years, but I mean, yeah, it's like, you're, like, nervous all the time. And you're like, it's this, and it's, yeah. So that's a great pick. Okay, what is a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
The Ledge by Fleetwood Mac. So the thing about this is, like, the Ledge kind of represents a more general phenomenon, which is, like, that when I came to realize that bands that were ubiquitous on the radio
mm-hmm.
with a handful of songs had so much more to offer.
Yeah.
Right. And, like, the album Tusk is one of my favorite albums ever. And
mm-hmm.
before I heard Tusk, I loved Fleetwood Mac already. You know, Rumors and the radio hits and everything. But, you know, you put on Tusk, and then there's the first song, based on what it's called right now. It's kind of, it's a little more sparse. You're like, okay, it's different. It's not as radio friendly, but then The Ledge comes on, and it's like this unhinged Lindsey Buckingham. Yeah. I recently read that to do the vocal takes, sometimes he taped a microphone to the floor and would, like, sing in push-up position, like, at the microphone. You know, it sounds like maybe one of the most.
Did.
unhinged coke fueled recording sessions in the history of rock music. But you hear that, the ledge, and you're like, whoa, like this is,
oh man.
Oh, you know, I think he's trying to like play punk music.
Right. Yeah.
And, so I almost chose, Cowboy Song by Thin Lizzy for this, because like Thin Lizzy is another band where, you know, the boys are back in town, but like if you scratch the surface, it's like every song and every album by them is just like incredible.
Right.
And you know, The Ledge made me realize that about Fleetwood Mac. Like there's so much going on. And even with just that final lineup, and then they have all the other lineups to go back and check out. And they're just like so many different styles and varieties of music under this umbrella that if you were casual about it, you'd only have heard like, you know, Dreams and Gold Dust Woman or The Chain or whatever. And like, you'd be missing out on all that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love Fleetwood Mac and I love Lindsey Buckingham. So I'm like, I had this conversation on the show many times about they're kind of a choose your fighter band.
Yeah.
And like, I love a lot of, you know, I got all the time in the world for Stevie and Chris, like all of them, but like Lindsey's my dude, man. He is just fucking bananas.
Well, yeah. I mean, that solo album is called Go Insane, right?
Right. And it's, and again, I mean, you listen to that and I love it. And you listen and it's just like, man, cocaine is a hell of a drug.
I had it on and somebody said like, this is like a male Kate Bush.
Oh man. I can see it. That's wild. Holy shit.
Right. As it kind of blew my mind too.
Yeah. And as somebody who like Kate Bush is among the greatest ever to me. Whoa. Okay. I'm going to think about that after we get done here. all right, lyrics. What about lyrics? What are you, a big lyrics person? Do you?
I love lyrics.
Okay, so can like bad lyrics ruin a song?
I mean, possibly, but I rarely think lyrics are bad. Like the only time, so like back to the Rolling Stones and like Low Lows or whatever. It's like on Sticky Fingers, the same album with Sway. It's like lyrically, I have trouble enjoying brown sugar because it's like gross.
Yeah.
So, right. But it doesn't mean the lyrics to it are bad in like a lyrical or poetic sense. They're like, they're sick. They're like off-putting. Yeah. So like, that's the only time I'm probably going to think lyrics are bad. I kind of have a low bar. I mean, if the singer's putting them across well and they're not offensive on their face, then I'm probably going to dig them. But then within that, there's obviously ways to just completely blow my mind.
All right. Speaking of which, what are your favorite lyrics?
Well, again, it's like, it's so hard to choose. There are so many I love, but what I chose for this is a song that is just lyrics and a couple clicks of a tape machine, I think, which is Dust Blows Forward and the Dust Blows Back by Captain Beefheart.
Yeah.
These lyrics are like, they're like a diamond to me. They're perfect. There's nothing you could add or take away somehow. Mm-hmm. Like oftentimes I'm thinking like, how could I write something and then it just come across this perfect? Like, you know, it's like Americana. So he's, you know, it feels like some kind of train hobo kind of situation, but like, it feels like something more like something more lofty or spiritual somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's like kind of funny, like, you know, he's like, I took off my pants and felt free, wind blowing up at me and up the canyon. It's like you know, just every part of it is so, and there's something like in writing, you know, you're supposed to like show not tell. It's like images, and that song is just a series of images, you know, hot coffee from a crimped up can, And my friends and I would just like, you know how people are like, oh, millennials would just sit and say Anchorman quotes at each other for 4 hours. We would do that with like lyrics from Trout Mask Replica, specifically from Dust Blows Forward and Dust Blows Back, and then like the little interstitial parts, you know, Fast and Bulbous and that thing where he's right. like, oh, well, there's just rats. There's just so many rats out there to start shooting them. I don't know. There's something about those words that are just like completely timeless. Yeah. Even though they seem to be kind of hinting at some kind of 1930s rail riding hobo situation.
Yeah, like there's this feeling to it where it feels like some kind of weird folk tale or something. Like hobo train jumping. I don't know. But then there's also kind of like a weird dreamlike quality to it. Just some of the image, like the description, like it's, I don't know. It's one I remember hearing, like the first time I ever heard this, like I thought it was the weirdest shit I'd ever heard, and I couldn't. And I loved it. Like, it was one of those things where it's like, I don't understand the hell's going on here. I need to listen to this over and over again. And telling all my friends, you've got to hear this. And we're all just, I don't know that we ever sat around quoting it to each other, although we may have, but it was this, like, all of us like, holy shit, what the hell?
It's just left of feeling real. So it's like, it's just.
Yeah.
So like, I think people would like conflate that or like compare this to Tom Waits or something, which I love Tom Waits, but Tom Waits' stuff is grounded, even right. though he didn't live it. As we all know, Tom Waits is like kind of sort of an actor
right.
in his music. Like when he's writing these hobo type things, it's grounded. Like, and it's got the same beautiful imagery and it's tactile, but like there's nothing unreal about it. But when you listen to the mm-hmm. Captain Beefheart, things like that, it's just uncannily, just somehow mystical, just slightly outside of reality, slightly alien. And I think that's what makes it so perfect and like, you know, not replicable.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine him like, and even think about like, you know, like all like the tape clicks, like somebody was recording, like he's asleep and just saying this stuff out loud in his sleep, like he's like dreaming out loud or something. And someone's just recording it.
Yeah.
And it's, it's incredible. And it's, I love it too. So, what cover is better than the original?
Oh, it's Suzanne by Nina Simone.
I feel like there's like at least a dozen Nina Simone like covers that could answer this question. And this is definitely one of them.
Yeah, Nina Simone's the queen of doing other people's songs and like kind of doing them better.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's because like we were saying about Mick Jagger's performance or whatever, but like Nina Simone times 10, she never.
Yeah.
Never leaves anything behind.
Yeah, like, she's never mailing it in.
No, like, and she was just like a completely live wire. Just like Suzanne, her version of Suzanne, it's just like, it's like a slow boil. It's like,
yeah,
ooh, just it's, hot yes. under the surface. And I absolutely love Leonard Cohen, but you know, and her band is always so good too.
I know,
and so they give it a little bit more. You know, it cooks a little harder. It just
it does. But
yeah, she just
it
never
feels like it feels like she like, I don't know, like finds and the actual truth of this song and shows it to everybody or something. Like, it, yeah, the performance on this is just, it is white hot.
Yeah. Cause you know, the song's got those like kind of like religious, like undertones and, mm-hmm. she hits it from a different angle that's like, yeah, it's more fiery.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Yeah, Nina Simone covers, there's so many good ones, but I love this one. What's the best hype song?
So Motor Away by Guided by Voices.
Yeah, this is just like fast and bright and
and the lyrics of this one get me hyped up because for a long time, like my life was characterized by a lot of actual motoring away. I think we've talked about this. Maybe like, is your partner an archaeologist?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I was thinking that too. I was like, was that us?
Yes. So I was an archaeologist for like almost a decade, and that as you might be aware, your partner probably had this phase of her career. Like, I was always on the road, like living out of hotels and working these different jobs. And like, a lot of times it sucked. You know, you wouldn't be treated so well as an employee in this situation. So like, right. I'd be frustrated by that. And so like in the morning before work, if I was frustrated, I'd like put on Guided by Voices. And there's other songs that would hype me up, but Motor Away would hype me up on any day. But then like when I was leaving, it's like I'm motoring away. And it would be very often that I was motoring away from things. And this song just got me totally hyped up.
Yeah, no, that's, I can totally see that. Yeah, this song always, it feels like joy in motion or something. It's like, it's so, like, for a band that has so many great songs in their catalog, like, this is up there with the best of them. And, I can totally envision that, especially the situation you describe. It is very familiar in my life, or was. Like, now it's totally different, but, okay, what is the song that means the most to you? And it's not, you know, not necessarily the song itself, but because of what you associate it with or who you associate it with.
So this one is I Found a Reason by Velvet Underground. And the reason for it being so, like, important to me is it was the... So when my wife and I got married, like, this is the song we sort of walked up to the altar or whatever it is to. And two of my friends, former bandmates, they, like, performed it. Just with the guitar, and they were singing harmonies.
That's cool. And, you know, the
ba, ba, ba. Uh-huh. And, you know, they did like the whole thing, and it was really beautiful. And I mean, just the song's totally beautiful on its own. Lou Reed goes into that little, I mean, I want to say it's like an homage to old country songs where he stops singing and starts just doing that straight up talking thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, just cause it was our wedding song. So that's why it's,
no, that's awesome. Bill.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. I love this song. To me, there's something about it. It's like, it feels like earnest and ironic at the same time, which somehow makes it hit harder. it's like, I don't know. It's such a great song, but
I feel like that earnest and ironic at the same time. I mean, that's like Lou Reed, you know,
right?
He you listen to him and it's like, he wants to be detached and above it all, but you're listening to him and you can tell he's not really.
Yeah, I think that's,
he's got some skin in the game.
Yeah, for sure. Earnest and ironic, the life of Lou Reed. It's a free hit for anybody who wants to write, is writing a book on him. All right, last question. What is your favorite song, at least in this moment in time? What is your favorite song?
So for this one, I put Stroke at Noel by Big Star.
Yeah.
And, you know, as soon as I heard this song, I was just like completely captivated. It's got such a weird timing. and like, I've tried to play it. I can play it by myself, but I've tried to play it with bands and I can never get the rhythm section to figure it out. Cause Jody Stevens was like a mutant drummer.
Right.
And I also think that the way that this song was recorded originally was probably like Alex Chilton was like half asleep on heroin and recorded like an acoustic guitar and vocals part. And then they like brought the rest of the band in to try to fill it out.
Yeah.
And like string sections and stuff. And so it's got a very strange cadence and, you know, the way the drums are is just, it's off, but it's catchy. And so, and the song, it's less than 2 minutes. The lyrics are like apocalyptic, but casual, which is something that really appeals to me. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about it. Yeah. Like that off feeling. It's like, I don't know. This, like the strings, they feel like just slightly out of tune or something, or it's like, it feels like everybody's playing it like they're trying to remember it as they play it or something.
That's how it sounds. Yeah.
Yeah. And that really, yeah, like that, I find that captivating. And then, yeah. And then Alex's voice, like it just kind of floats above it all.
His singing is just, I don't know. Alex Chilton's a guy that could do, he could, inhabit every end of the spectrum from like complete trash in a good way. You know what I mean? Just like fucked up sounding music to like the most sublime, beautiful, polished moment that you would want. And the last lyric of that song, keeping an eye on the sky, will they come? Oh, the bombs. Like, how could lyrics get any better than that?
Right. Yeah. Speaking, favorite lyrics. That's like right up there.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's a perfect place to end. Keep your eye on the sky.
You have to, right?
Right. Yeah. Because, for sure. Well, this was way too much fun.
Yeah. So, I had a lot of fun too. Thank you.
Thanks for doing this. Modern Folk Electronic Ensemble is out now in Debacle. You got any shows or anything coming up that you want to?
I'm trying to think. I don't know. I'm doing I'm like playing background music at a farmer's market at the end of June.
All right.
We hit it really hard on shows in 2024. You know what? We have a special show coming at in late August. I'm not going to actually say what it is yet, but
okay. Yeah. Keep your eyes peeled. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, everybody go check out the record. It is awesome. You can read my thoughts on it on Foxy Just Tell. Thanks.
Thank you. This was awesome.
Thank you again to Jay Moss, aka The Modern Folk. Listen to all his picks at the link in the show notes. Pick up the Modern Folk Electronic Ensemble album, out now in Debacle. Also a link to that. It's a killer record. And I really feel like it's going to get a lot of, it just feels like this late night summer album to me for some reason. I don't know. Thanks, of course, for listening. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and review, because that stuff really helps, you know, algorithms and all that bullshit. And if, you know, you really want to keep this and Foxy Digitalis going, patreon.com/FoxyDigitalis or thejewelgarden.bandcamp.com/subscribe. That ongoing support means everything. Thank you to everybody who does that and has continued doing that. It means the freaking world. Otherwise, until next time, keep on listening whatever the hell you want.